This is Driven by Data, the podcast.
Welcome back to another season of Driven by Data, the podcast. Powered by Orbition Group and hosted by me, Kyle Winterbottom. We are delighted to bring you season four of Driven by Data, the podcast, and our aim remains exactly the same: to bring you some of the most respected and recognized thought leadership figures from the world of data analytics to share their knowledge, ideas, use cases, and insights across how they've tackled some of the industry's most trending topics and challenges. All that's left to say is sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Driven by Data, the podcast, season four. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Arina Mihai, who is the Director of Data Marketing Analytics and Decision Science at Adidas. So, Arina, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. Pleasure to speak with you.
No. Pleasure is all ours. Where we always start, Arina, is by asking our guests to give themselves, a brief introduction into their background and journey up until this point in time, if you'd be so kind.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start actually with my university degrees, because I know that they're relevant to the discussion that we'll have. I hold a bachelor degree in economics, international business from the Vienna University. And I also have a master's degree in marketing management from the Erasmus University in Rotterdam. I've always been fascinated about how people take decisions and how different biases and nudges influence decision making. So I enjoy actually the consumer behavior courses at university the most. And after graduation, I started working in market and consumer research, initially worked as market research analyst, advising CPG companies on new product launches based on consumer surveys. Then shortly after, I changed into the field, which was initially called web analytics. Now it's called digital analytics. It's more broad. And I was a consultant for telecom companies across the Netherlands and Switzerland before moving to Adidas in 2015. So I have over 12 years of experience across data analytics and data science across a variety of companies and industries. And I'm currently working as a director of data, marketing analytics and decision science at Adidas, as you said, currently based in Amsterdam.
Nice. Well, thank you for the whistle stop tour. They're a very interesting career. What I always find fascinating, Arina, is the amount of people we speak to on this show who come from such different, educational backgrounds, right? And what I find interesting, in fact, is that a lot of people that end up in the realms of data analytics leadership might not have always come from a traditional, computer science type of route. So do you think, I'm just curious, do you think that's helped you? Doing a kind of economics and business degree, do you think that's helped you in the realms of data and analytics leadership?
I think to some extent, yes, to some extent that, because as I was telling you that I don't have a STEM degree per se. So that sometimes really gave me a little bit of an imposter syndrome, especially when starting to work more in the data science and ML space. But I have to say that the fact that I've been an analyst for most of my career, that's put me, I think, in a great position as an analytics leader currently, because I've really been in a very close collaboration with business stakeholders throughout. I've come to understand what are good ways to communicate with them and what are not so good ways. Also, my educational background, the fact that I studied marketing management, is kind of a field that brings you in close to empathy and close to thinking from a consumer perspective and what are good strategies, let's say, to attract consumers and to entice consumers. If you think about branding perspective, I think that's, especially since I'm working at Adidas, that really plays a big element, branding as a company, but also branding our team in the rest of the organization, where we have quite a lot of other analytics and data teams.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I mean, this topic is just fascinating to me. So I'm looking forward to kind of getting into this. I guess before we do that, just give our listeners a bit of insight into, I guess, you know, your role, what you're responsible for, you know, why you're there at Adidas effectively.
Yeah. So my team supports the European e-commerce business across the whole data value chain. So meaning making sure that on the one hand, we have a stable, trustworthy and relevant data foundation to power analytics and decision intelligence use cases. Then secondly, provide insight into media performance across paid, organic and owned channels. And third, enhance decision making through advanced capabilities such as causal inference, machine learning, and AI across the e-commerce organization. So we really work, or we touch to some extent, all teams within the e-commerce.
Yeah, nice. And obviously, the phrase decision science in your title, and I know that kind of, you know, that term in of itself normally came out of the kind of credit space, right? Just give us a bit of insight into this. What does decision science mean for you at Adidas?
Yeah. So decision science means really that the aim of the team is to enable better decisions through advanced, and decisions here is meant more in the internal context. So not really influencing end consumers, but influencing internal decision makers, stakeholders to take better decisions. Understand the impact of decisions through more robust methodologies. So as I mentioned, causal inference, which we use quite a lot in situations where A/B testing is not the most appropriate, but also across machine learning and AI capabilities for insight generation that is not possible or is very manual otherwise, predictive and prescriptive analytics across multiple areas of the business.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I've had many guests on this show who kind of talk about actually we should move away from the notion of data science and it all should be about decision science, right? Because that's ultimately what we're trying to drive towards, is better decision making to improve better business performance, right? So it's I just find it fascinating that you've got that as a title as opposed to data science. But there we go. If we get onto titles, we'll be here all day, right? That's one of my pet peeves, as you've probably heard from my LinkedIn rants. So I guess you touched upon there a second ago about imposter syndrome. So I really want to delve into that, because I think there'll be plenty of people that listen to this podcast that are on, you know, the ascent of their careers, who will probably look to you as a, you know, female in a data leadership role, very fondly working for a huge brand, right? Like Adidas. And I just find it fascinating that, you know, when we spoke offline, you talked about the kind of feeling of imposter syndrome and the relationship that, you know, you had with education and how all of that kind of meshes together, really. How have you dealt with that? How have you learned to cope with that? And just talk us through that journey a little bit, if you would.
Yeah. So indeed, admittedly, when I started the role back 2 years ago, I had a bit of an imposter syndrome, because I was coming much more from an analytics background, not so much data science and ML, although I did collaborate very closely with data scientists before, and I had, I think, a general good understanding, but of course I wasn't in the details. So what I found really helpful for me and also for the team to build the trust with them was that I was authentic and not pretending that I do have the same level of technical depth as my team, which I don't. So I heavily rely on them for certain decisions. And I do see myself as the connector between the team and business stakeholders. So making sure that we work on the right problems, that we have the right visibility in the organization, and that we have a voice and we're heard. And also important was that I admitted what I don't know and I remain curious. I think just generally being curious is one of the best qualities that you can have as data and analytics person at whatever level, because there's so many new developments in the field. So even if someone has studied specifically a STEM subject 5 to 10 years ago, there's so many new developments in the field of being able to do things more effectively or more efficiently with new methodologies, new tools, that, you know, to some extent, a STEM degree comes in, I believe, second, and you do need to keep yourself up to date with new trends, new things that are happening in the industry to stay relevant. And that's something that I've always done, really read up on new trends, reading analytics books in my spare time as well, staying connected with other data and analytics professionals on LinkedIn or other communities, also doing courses that enhance my knowledge even before being in this role. So I think I showed the interest and the appetite for data science and machine learning from a product management perspective already before I was in this role. And luckily at IDAS, we have a very vibrant and collaborative environment for data and analytics professionals, and also opportunities for continuous learning, such as Data Camp access is available for everyone. So this is really a huge plus for ongoing professional development, that we have access to those type of courses, and also an environment where knowledge is shared, is discussed, to really bring people along.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, I find it really interesting because I think there's a lot of debate in our industry now, right, about the purpose of the leader within a data analytics team. And I think there's always been this pressure is maybe the word, maybe too strong of a word, but, you know, it is often pressure is felt that, you know, because you are the leader that you have to be the most technically capable. And in fact, I think we've proven many times over that that's not really the role of the leader, right? Of course, they need to have an understanding and an appreciation of what's possible and how things work. But actually, that's the whole reason you have a team, right? You know, and that's why I constantly talk about, you know, the similarities and the analogy of like football, right? You know, there's very few football coaches or managers that are better than or were better than their players, right? You know, and so it mean that they are any less capable of doing that specific job. So yeah, find that super interesting. Talk to me about the journey that you've been on then in terms of building that team. You know, was that kind of, because I guess if you're looking at this straight away from the fact of, well, I might feel, you know, a bit of imposter syndrome here because I'm not as capable. How has that kind of played a part in terms of how you've designed and built the team that you now lead?
Yeah. So I think what's important for any data and analytics team is to have complementary skills. Looking at my team members, you know, I have, let's say, data engineering, data governance and quality expertise in the team. Also, marketing analytics expertise, which is very specific. You do have to understand all about the new, for example, new marketing tactics and how they're used, what sort of consumers are targeted there, what are the right KPIs, right, to evaluate performance. On the other side of the spectrum, there's also AI, ML capabilities that we use in decision intelligence. And of course, all these really require very specific skill sets that come together to achieve the end impact. In the end. So I think, you know, I try to have complementary skills in the team across the whole data value chain, as I was saying, people that can work together well, that are collaborative, that exchange information, and that they care about the end impact of the team, and not just, you know, one person is great and working in isolation from the others, working without understanding the business priority and the strategy of the company, because then you're not working on the right things, you can't achieve the right level of impact. So that's really where I saw my role, and not necessarily, you know, telling or having a big opinion on what model needs to be used for a specific use case, but more interaction model with stakeholders as well.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Talk to me about your journey then from, I guess, being an individual contributor into the role of leadership, because I find it, again, very interesting that, you know, you kind of sit there and think that, okay, I'm feeling this imposter syndrome, but still want to put yourself out of that comfort zone, I guess, right? Because I think there's a lot of people in our industry that are quite comfortable. Actually, I come in, this is my part of what I do it well, and I go home, and, you know, I've actually got no appetite to try and push myself outside of my comfort zone to move into a leadership role and, you know, pick up new skills and things like that. So just talk to me about that journey, and I guess, you know, the strategies that you employed to, you know, make sure that you're not a bottleneck of the team, if that makes sense.
So actually, the reason why I wanted to get into analytics leadership at the time, back, you know, a few years ago, was that I wanted to make things better for analysts. So I was in a previous company called LeasePlan, which is, I think, one of the biggest, or if not the biggest, leasing company in the world. And I was a senior digital analyst at the time. And I had encountered in my work certain, you know, blockers or certain things that were not so productive, I think, from an analyst perspective. And I really felt, you know, if I get to a more leadership role, because then I was an individual contributor, if I get to a leadership role, I can effect the right change in the organization to enable the analysts to be their voice. Because I had been, up to that point, I had been an analyst. So I really wanted to make things better, to improve things, give them access to certain tools that they didn't have, or certain processes that they were a bit, you know, with their hands, their back, enable them with upskilling. So really try to fill the gap that at the time I felt to enable the team. And to your question about empowering the team, my current team, and avoiding being a bottleneck, what I think is really key is setting clear expectations for each person and defining the team direction as a whole. What is our North Star? What is our purpose in the organization? And also fostering an environment of psychological safety, so that when things don't go as planned, we have certain blockers, or things take longer than expected because there's, you know, the element of uncertainty or experimentation, which sometimes takes longer than expected, that team members do feel safe and do feel the trust to raise issues, and we can work together on finding solutions. Whether that is reaching out to another team that helps us, or whether it's setting the right expectations with stakeholders, it really depends. But I think the psychological safety aspect is important. And also recognizing team members, both internally and towards stakeholders, as being responsible for a designated scope. While at the same time, of course, I appreciate collaboration, bouncing off ideas, giving each other feedback to become better. And this can come from me, but it can also come from other team members. I do think it's important that we have designated leads for each item on our roadmap, because what I've seen in my experience is that that's how people get empowered as well, by committing to certain items. And speaking about roadmap, it's not, of course, just me, you know, telling the team, hey, this is our roadmap, this is what we need to do. But we come together to co-create our roadmap, and each person, so we do a roundtable, each person is heard, whether commitments are realistic, whether we're missing anything. Yeah, so in the end, it's all a team effort, but it's important to have designated leads for each item on our roadmap. That's in my experience. And on the topic of what you mentioned before, technical decision and like what model is being used for a certain business problem, that's why I have technical leads, right? And I guess it would not be motivating for them if I tell them, you know, you should use this or that. That's where I rely on their expertise. Of course, I do challenge sometimes. And since I do keep myself updated with new developments in the field, I do bring in new ideas. Especially in the AI area, there's a lot of new models, if you think about LLMs, that are being developed. So I do keep an eye and an open ear on those things that are happening, but everything is in discussion with the team.
Yeah, nice. Do you find, and this again, just purely me thinking out loud here and just curiosity more than anything else, but do you find that more collaborative, you know, joined up approach helps with, you know, giving the team context and obviously a little bit of accountability as well? I guess just to frame the question, I think, you know, there's a lot of debate in our industry, right, about, you know, well, why there's things that get built and then they never get used. And often, you know, I've spoken about this fairly openly, but when we speak to these people, obviously in our day job, you have people that decide that, okay, they might now want to move on to a different opportunity or whatever the case may be. And often one of the drivers is that they feel that they can't deliver their best work because they're not really sure on why they're doing what they're doing, right? You know, so it's kind of a project that's driven almost like a conveyor belt of production, right? You know, it's a new project and it comes, it gets done, off it goes. And then they never hear about that again. They don't know whether it was good, bad, successful, unsuccessful, you know. So I always wonder if, from a leadership standpoint, if there's more context around, look, this is who we are, this is what we're trying to do, this is why we're trying to do it that way, here's what the end goal is going to be, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. Logic just tells me that that's probably a better way to work. And I think that's kind of what you were describing there, right? You know, a more collaborative environment where people have accountability and responsibility for being part of the process, not just delivering a piece of work and then off it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I'm definitely very keen on feedback from my team as well. And if there's something that they don't understand at some point, why we are prioritizing something, then I also ask them, hey, just put your hand up, ask questions. So in my team, I try to foster an environment of questions and answers and trying to give the team context on why, of course, we're doing things and what I feel like based on my conversations with business stakeholders or different meetings that I'm in where I hear things being discussed, I give that back to the team. And of course, not only hearing from me, but also having business stakeholders come in and talk about their needs and about their usage, and even sometimes maybe doubts on things that have been built that really help the team get the context straight from the source, you know, to make sure that, because if they do get the context from the business stakeholder, they also feel like they're part of the process and not necessarily everything coming from me. And they also get a bigger sense of ownership, showcasing their work, for example, to end stakeholders, taking one through maybe a dashboard that they've built or modeled the results and how to interpret that, going through the methodology, of course, at the right level of granularity. That gives them a sense of pride, accountability, and also improves their communication skills, because that's also something I think that just generally defines, or let's say separates, good data people from excellent data people, knowing how to communicate to, depending on the audience and with the right context.
Yeah, 100%. You've touched upon a few times, Irina, about, you know, you seeing your role as, or one of the key facets of your role as being ensuring that your team are working on the right problems, which again, we all know has been somewhat of a challenge in our industry sometimes. But I guess, talk us through your process around, you know, how do you go about the prioritization piece? You know, what's the criteria that you use when selecting which business problems that your team should be working on versus not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we definitely need to understand what are the organizational strategic priorities, which luckily, I think in our company, they're made pretty clear at the beginning of each year. So that's definitely very helpful. So for us, the fit with company priorities is really number one. Equally important is the stakeholder interest and the commitment to work with us, because especially, and here I'm thinking about decision intelligence systems that are meant for specific teams or specific people. Especially in the beginning of a project, there's need for more frequent connects, right? So on things like, what are we really trying to achieve? What is the problem or the decision that we're trying to support? What is the current thought process or just decision process of the team or stakeholder? And even throughout the project, there are certain moments that I call decision moments internally for the team where we need to decide things like how the look and feel of a capability needs to look like to meet the needs of this person or team. Certain decisions on continuing the project or maybe not when it comes to certain uncertainties that we need to take together. So basically, my point is here that we need to make sure that stakeholders understands that there is a level of commitment needed from them and not expect, you know, that they've given us a brief at some point, and then 6 months later, we come out with something that is useful for them and ready to be used, and everything is working fine. Because especially in decision intelligence systems, it's really a very close collaboration between the development team and the business stakeholders. And also very important is, of course, the complexity or feasibility topic. So whether we have the skills in the team, we have the bandwidth, also fair idea of the data needed, and we are confident in the quality and accessibility of that, that's really key. So actually, this also ties more into evaluation criteria, which is very important, because otherwise, if you make a full roadmap for a project, you know, looking 6 months or 1 year down the line, and then you realize that you don't have certain key data that prevents you from delivering that project, that also needs to be clear to the stakeholders that there is a certain dependency that you're not clear about.
Yeah. Now, that's really interesting. So it's almost there like gauging and testing the level of interest and appetite and commitment from the business stakeholder, that coupled with, do we have the right data, accessibility to the right data, and do we have the skills internally to deliver the project is the fundamental piece. That's really interesting. Your language fascinates me, Arina, in the sense that, and I guess this just must come from a place of the culture at Adidas is all about how are we using data and analytics to drive better decision-making, I presume, because you keep mentioning decision intelligence systems and getting to the point of decision and so on and so forth. Is that a fair assumption? And I guess that just really intrigues me because, as I said, a lot of data analytics teams are out there building stuff that, you know, often these journeys start from fear of missing out and a bit of hype, and you know, there's all this stuff getting built that never gets used, whereas it seems to me very intentional in your environment that actually everything we're doing here is to try and get to a better decision. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think definitely. And we have indeed ties into the culture at Adidas that we have a very open environment where feedback and challenging politely is really encouraged. So if someone feels like we're not working on the right things, or they don't have the clarity about that, they are definitely encouraged to raise their hands. And we do also push back to stakeholders sometimes. And I think that's really a question that anyone working in data analytics should do, right? What do you want to use this for? What do you need it for? What's the urgency? So really trying to understand more about the context of the ask or of the priority. Because I've also been, you know, I think more earlier in my career in situations where I've built something like a dashboard, let's say, and then it doesn't get used. And then I realized I didn't ask the right questions because maybe they needed something completely different from what they actually asked. So yeah, I'm in that position that I have some learnings that I'm using now.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I guess, can you explain to us then, I guess, the importance of having a communication plan to engage effectively with stakeholders in relation to the projects that you're describing? Because I know when we spoke offline, this was one of the topics that you obviously care very deeply about. And I guess that's obviously very evident in terms of how you prioritize the work that you do and how you make sure that the business, in quotation marks, is interested. Right. Just talk us through that process.
Yeah. So indeed, the engagement and commitment of stakeholders, I think, is really one of the key prioritization or even evaluation criteria that we decide, that helps us decide whether we take on a project or not. And here, I don't mean having really a rigid plan that we align up front. We're going to get together every 2 weeks for 2 hours or every week or something like that. But it's really more about raising the awareness of what checkpoints we will have during the duration of the project, what input will be needed throughout the life cycle of the project. And here again, I mean more towards decision intelligence systems and not necessarily analyses or data pipelines, but something that is really takes longer time to build and needs to support certain decisions. And if you think back what I said before, that as a team, we can't be expected to deliver a decision support capability with minimal stakeholder collaboration. So getting a brief at some point and then having the expectation that 6 months down the line will deliver something very useful that can be embedded in the way of working of this person just doesn't work. So if there's a low commitment upfront, then we know it won't be a success. And even, you know, we've had situations, of course, with certain teams, everyone is very busy, but having this awareness upfront also makes it easier for us to manage situations where maybe a certain stakeholder can't give us feedback in a timely manner and gets us delayed in the project. As sometimes if you have, for example, the look and feel of a capability, you want to agree on that. You don't want to, you can progress to some extent with the back end that is being built, but the front end, you really need to have the checkpoint, because otherwise if you make the front end in a way that is not appropriate for the person, or the person doesn't like it, then the project gets delayed. So having the visibility and the awareness upfront also helps us manage situations like this, where we might get a delay, where is a dependency on the stakeholder. So of course, we want to have the reputation that we are a reliable team, but it goes two ways, right? Because it's a collaboration with business stakeholders to achieve the end impact.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I find that fascinating. So effectively what you're talking about there is kind of an agreed model of engagement, right? To say like, look, we can do this, this, and this, and then we're going to need to talk again at this point to go through things, get feedback, blah, 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 blah. Does that change by project to project and stakeholder to stakeholder, or is there kind of a framework of some description that you tend to use?
I think at the high level, we just need to be aware of the checkpoints that we'll have with the stakeholder. And in some cases, it might be more frequent towards the beginning of a project. In some cases, it might be already organic if we build a capability for our own analytics team, for example. In some cases where you have someone like at a VP level that you know is not able to dedicate time on a biweekly basis, I do tend to agree upfront that we're going to have, let's say, a monthly check-in on specific items like feedback on an MVP that is already built. So things like that. But I can't say that we have, a super fixed template, because we also account for the problem statements and for the context around that.
Yeah. You talked earlier about, if things aren't going the way that you were hoping they would, or there's delays or whatever the case may be, maybe the appetite wasn't what it was. And I think obviously the whole thing that you've just described there around having the regular check-in points and that engagement model is agreed up front, obviously will mitigate a lot of these challenges, right? But just talk us through, I guess, when you are prioritizing workload, and if then projects aren't going the way that you were hoping they were for whatever reason, if they're not yielding the required progress that you were anticipating, like what happens at that point? Like, what's the decision criteria that you take on what happens if this isn't working?
Yeah. So if something is not working as expected, we usually have retrospectives with our team. So the project team that works on that specific project, and we try to identify causes for why things didn't go as planned. And we take the appropriate action based on the cause and whether it's in our control or not. On occasion, we have made the decision to pause or stop a project that wasn't yielding the required results or wasn't a priority anymore, because with a dynamic business such as e-commerce, priorities can also change. So we just need to be really plugged into that and be aware when priorities change, because that automatically means that we also probably don't get the stakeholder commitment anymore and interest on that particular project. And sometimes it's completely okay to refocus on our energy and time rather than really persist on something that is not yielding the right results. I think that it's really important to be honest with ourselves and with stakeholders. What's the cause that things are being paused or stopped, and really move on to the next thing? Because we do have quite a lot of use cases on our backlog. So it's not a matter of, not having things to work on that can be impactful.
Mm. I was going to ask, is the symptom of when appetite is lost, or when appetite is lost, is that normally the symptom that maybe it's not a priority anymore? Does that, you know, is that wholly obvious, or do you have to do a bit more investigating, if you like?
I think quite often it is obvious because the priorities of the organization are communicated quite widely, and I'm really in the loop of those. So, you know, that then it's really easy for me to understand, okay, we have been working on this particular capability that had the goal to affect this particular KPI, and it seems like this KPI is doing really well. We don't need to focus on that any longer. And at that moment, it's a checkpoint that I have with my stakeholders to really confirm that that's the case.
Yeah.
And in general, what I have seen, you know, with decision intelligence systems is that, at least with the ones that we have already launched and that are used, I'm in very close collaboration with the stakeholders and get recurring feedback, and I already know what are really the big unlocks for even further adoption. So in that case, it's easier to adjust the roadmap, because that's all what we kind of care about is further adoption. Adoption leads to higher business value from that capability.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, constant collaboration and communication really is the way forward to make sure that enough regular touch points that, yes, we're on track. Yes, this is still a priority. Yes, you know, blah, blah, blah. That makes sense. Yeah. So one of the things when we first spoke, Arena, offline, and you talked about, you know, the importance of creating a platform to showcase your team's work and, I guess, get interest from the business, both, you know, internally as a team and externally, which I found fascinating, right? Because I think there's so much in that that probably doesn't happen across many organizations' data analytics team, hence why, you know, you still get a lot of, as we discussed, things being built, not being used, all of that type of stuff. Just talk us through that journey then, and I guess the steps that you take to ensure that, you know, your team is visible. I guess, you know, you talked about branding before, right? So it's almost like branding your data team, which that concept will kind of stick with many people, I think.
Yeah. So what we do, I think we take quite a multifaceted approach to this, to communication, internal communication at the forefront, but also I do quite a bit of external communication and presenting at conferences, being active on LinkedIn, etc., which I do think as a leader is really important to attract good people to your team. You can't rely anymore on the company brand. I think you need to build the analytics brands of the company to really be able to attract good people in this environment. What we do internally, so we have a monthly analytics newsletter that we send to our whole e-commerce organization. We share highlights from across all our analytics team pillars. With updates, we try to make them short and concise and maybe intriguing, so that people get really hooked in, and nothing boring, nothing dry, but really why it matters to the organization, what's the impact. So I think that's really a key pillar. We also have a weekly organization-wide newsletter where each e-commerce team shares one story. So that one we also try to make as relevant as possible, sometimes with call to action, sometimes in the form of, did you know that X, Y, and Z happened? So really storytelling, I think, is really important in our communications, both written and verbal. And I also mentioned that we have organizational-wide meetings that we take advantage of, such as town halls where the whole e-com organization is present, sometimes people outside of that. So we try to bring one success story there about our team, really also introduce our team, because I think in such a big organization, sometimes it's not known what we do, what we can support even others with. So maybe people that haven't worked with us can find out about use cases that they can reach out to us for. And that's also really important. And also good, I think, to give a platform, as we were talking about the ownership topic and accountability, giving a platform to team members to talk about their own work, about their successes, collaboration with other teams as well. because very often it's not a one-man show or one-woman show. It's really cross-functional collaboration that achieves an impact. And what we also do is host community meetings. So both, we actually have data science community of practice within Adidas. We also have analytics huddles that we occasionally come in and present different topics. And we also have in the past hosted analytics meetups in our office on different use cases. So we had the decision intelligence meetup last year where we had people from different companies join in the Adidas office. I think we had something like 25, 30 people. It was sponsored by a few vendors. So it was actually really nice. Right before Christmas, we had the Christmas quiz as well. And it's really great for networking, for understanding what other people are working on, for getting feedback or questions that lead you maybe to, you know, have even more critical thinking about the things that you've done. So yeah, I really enjoy all these events. I think they're very important.
Yeah. I mean, I find this super fascinating, right? Because this is something that I, as part of our day job, we go in and help organizations to think about this stuff, not from just a talent attraction perspective, but also a retention perspective, right? Which the internal piece that you talk about there plays very heavily on in terms of helping to retain good people, which I think is super important. I mean, there's probably a load of businesses would love to do more of this stuff. I guess I'm keen for them to understand the mechanics behind it. Do you have people in your team that are responsible for that in terms of the newsletters, the meetups, or is it just members of your team that you're giving that accountability and responsibility to so that they can, you know, get more involved and have more visibility themselves? Or is there kind of some kind of, you know, team structure where you have a comms team and all of that type of stuff?
Yeah. Everyone is responsible for their own visibility to some extent. Personally, I'm responsible for the whole team newsletter. So I do things like putting reminders in people's calendars, really stating when the newsletter content is due, when we'll review. So myself and my two peers in the team will have a review. And I do send it out every month. For things like, so that's already embedded and included in people's goals, in 90-day plans, as we call them. And we do want to recognize the importance of those communications because they're not really byproducts of the work being done. So really calling them out specifically as goals, I think, is important. Yeah, and also when I look at project roadmaps, if we know we're going to have a town hall on a specific date, we all also incorporate the preparation for that within the roadmap because it takes time, it takes capacity that could be used on something else. So I do think it's really critical to call out these things and carve out time specifically. Otherwise, it tend not to happen. You know, people are, I think, very excited about working, or they're comfortable working in the weeds of things. But that doesn't lead to, I think, the right level of visibility and branding that we need, especially in larger companies, to effect change.
Yeah. Lorena, look, that's such a great point to finish on. And I think, you know, the message there is very clear, right? You've just got to create time to do it because it's important. Mm-hmm. And I think there's probably a lot of data analytics teams that never get to that. And often their reasoning is, well, you know, we don't have a team that does that. You know, there are some businesses out there that have kind of culture and communications team embedded into their data analytics type of capability. And that's great for them, right? But for people that don't have that, then it's on the leaders to make sure it still gets done, right? Because
Yeah, it definitely works.
Which I think is a really important message, because I think often what I tend to find is people say, oh, you know, well, we don't have the resource for that, so it doesn't happen. And it's like, well, you know, maybe you should find some time to do that because it will help you. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Exactly. No, I think indeed, as I said, it tends not to happen organically because analysts, data scientists are not necessarily the most comfortable in front of a large audience, in front of business stakeholders. But that's, I think, really up to leaders to entice them to go out of their comfort zone and also really improve the communication skills, because very often that's where the breakdown happens. And that's how you also give people more ownership and accountability and enable really a platform for themselves to, yeah, to raise the right visibility to their work.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Irina, conscious of time, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you as always. And yeah, we'll tag you into all of the social stuff when this goes live. And I'll be seeing you in June anyway, right? At the CDO Exchange Europe in Munich. So I look forward to it.
Thanks a lot, Kyle. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
And I appreciate your hoodie.
Yeah, well, obviously, I thought it was only fitting, right? To make sure we get the brand in there. So
exactly. It's funny that you're like dressed rather casually and I have like a blazer and business attire on. But I still have Adidas pants though. So
nice. There you go.
Thanks a lot.
All right, speak soon. Bye bye.
That's it for this episode of Driven by Data, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week speaking with another thought leader from the world of data and analytics. Until then, please follow Orbition Group on social media if you've not already done so, where you'll be able to subscribe and therefore be made aware of the podcasts as they arrive. And please share, like, and leave reviews so that more people from our industry get to hear and benefit from these two. If you've got any questions or you want to suggest ideas for topics or potential guests, then please feel free to reach out to me. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.